The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.
We always talk to you about letting us know who we'd like to have on or what topics you'd like to have. And so we had a listener, right,
Jenny,
that was interested in the midterm elections, right?
Absolutely, and the effect that that's going to have economically.
Okay. And then we get lucky. Okay. I mean, then we got really, really lucky because we're able to get Andy Freedman on a day. Now, let me give you a little idea. Andy, according to CNBC, and I quote, is one of the nation's most sought-after speaker on all things political. He is considered by CNBC also as Wall Street's tax expert, and they call him one of Washington's savviest political observers. And so with all the things going on, not just the midterm elections, which I think are going to be relatively important, but with the corporate inversions, we are very pleased and very fortunate today to have with us Andy Freedman. Good morning, Andy.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on, Mike.
Oh, thank you for being on with us. All right. In fact, I don't even know where to start because I consider both of those things pretty exciting. I tell you what, let's talk about corporate inversions first and taxation because they're just beating up one of the Democratic legislators doesn't want to eat at a Burger King anymore.
Oh, right, that's Brown out of Ohio.
Okay, so what's going on here? Is this going to continue? Are they ever going to change tax policy in Washington, D.C.? Are we, in fact, I heard yesterday that we were the most expensive corporate tax country in the world. And then this morning, somebody said we were one of the most expensive. What's the real truth?
Well, we do have the highest corporate tax rate among developed countries. So there may be some outlier countries that have slightly higher rates. But among the developed countries in Europe and Asia, we have the highest, particularly when you add state taxes on top of the federal tax rate. And that's what's leading to these companies leaving the country. I mean, for years we have seen companies moving operations overseas, manufacturing, answering telephones, and part of the reason for that is because the taxes are lower overseas. But what the next step that companies are taking is actually moving their headquarters out of the United States, which lets them save even more taxes. And so, I think that this is something that we're going to see probably continue unless we see somebody stop it. I'm not convinced that the administration can stop it, any administration. I don't think they have the power. So it would take Congress, and Congress doesn't agree on it right now.
Yeah, in fact, Congress, frankly, doesn't agree on much. We're going to get that in a minute because you wrote a great article about the Senate control. So you think this is continuing, and Burger King's like, not the only one. Is it like Microsoft or somebody, Apple or somebody's got...
Isn't it the Apple, one of the iPhones, isn't it based out of Ireland?
Tons of money. Well,
Apple does do a lot of their manufacturing over in Ireland, but they're still based in California, and they kind of make a point of being proud of that. But Medtronic, which is one of the big pharmaceutical-type companies, did this. I mean, let me tell you why... why it's particularly useful for companies that use technology, and that is they can put their intangible assets, like say a drug, the ability to make a drug offshore, and then all the royalties from around the world for that drug can flow in offshore rather than to the United States, and they can save an awful lot of taxes that way. So that's what companies are trying to do is move their headquarters, move their intangible assets offshore, and avoid U.S. taxes on that.
It would seem to me, then, that if you had a competitor that was offshore like that, they would have a competitive advantage. In other words, if I were McDonald's or I don't know who number two is, Kentucky Fried Chicken, Yum Brands or something like that, but if I were McDonald's, now Burger King has a competitive advantage because I understand the taxation in Canada is about 26%, and it's somewhere 40 or better here in the United States. That could almost be big enough, frankly, to make a big difference, not only in earnings, but in stock prices. And I saw an article yesterday, and I don't know if you agree with it, where it really is to the advantage of the investing public, particularly people, for instance, that invest in mutual funds that own some of these stocks, that it's really fair to the investing public for companies to do this.
Well, I think that there's some truth there. I mean, the president said it's unpatriotic for them to move, and I understand why he's saying that, but you know, if you're a company, your obligation is to your shareholders, and that means to show the highest profits. And I think one of the reasons this has popped up on the screen is because just what you're saying, Mike, that some companies have done it, and so that leads their competitors to do it, and then it becomes more of a, something that continues. Having said all that, and I agree with you're saying, with everything you're saying, there was an interesting study by Reuters that came out last week that shows that companies that have inverted actually have lagged the market in their returns and their profits. And we don't quite know why that is, because you're right, they're saving taxes. One reason might be, just to kind of make your listeners aware of this, is that if companies simply go out and try to find merger partners for tax reasons, maybe they're not the best merger partners for business reasons. And maybe that's why some of these companies haven't done as well as expected. I'm not saying that's true of Burger King. We don't know that yet. But ones in the past haven't done quite as well, believe it or not.
Oh, interesting. Really, really interesting. All right, well, I guess we'll be seeing and hearing a lot more about that going forward. I've just got to get to next to my next subject. I don't understand politics anymore. I'm 63 years old, and when I came out of college about 100 years ago, I actually worked for the National Republican Party for a while because I happened to be dating the sister of a guy named Henson Moore, who was running in Louisiana, first Baton Rouge Parish, second Republican to get elected in the state of Louisiana since Reconstruction. Dave Treen had been elected as governor. So I was actually actively involved in that campaign and a runoff and stuff like that. You know, it was kind of ugly politics over there a little bit, but it was nothing compared to what it is now. And the polarization, and you have this, you wrote this great article entitled Senate Control Within GOP's Reach, but Tea Party Could Weaken Grass. And it's in the Washington Update. And you call it here ideological polarization. What is going on here? Will it ever go away? Can we ever get back to the point where two sides actually talk and get things done? Because I won't even go into it. I'm just going to let you answer that question first. I'm frustrated.
I think it's going to be hard. So, I mean, let me kind of point out why I think we have so much polarization. There's a lot of reasons. You know, the 24-hour news cycle may have something to do with it. But the real reason we have the polarization right now, I think, was the redistricting that took place after the 2010 census. So after the 2010 census, all the states got to reset the boundaries of their congressional districts. And in 2010, just like the Republicans took over the House of Representatives, they took over most of the state legislatures, which was intended, by the way. They knew this was going to happen, so they targeted state legislatures. So in most cases, you have Republican legislatures setting the boundaries of the districts, and they set the boundaries in a way to make most of the districts as possible safe for Republicans. And, you know, this is a process called gerrymandering. You end up with these really weird-shaped districts with three tentacles and four heads or whatever. So you have the safe districts for Republicans, and then the residual districts in the state, maybe in the cities, would be safe for Democrats. And if you had a Democratic-run state, they did the same thing, only in reverse. The result of this is that if you're in the House of Representatives now, you don't have to worry about winning the general election because your whole district votes the same way you do. Whether you're Republican or Democrat, doesn't matter. You know your district votes the way you do. What you have to worry about is winning the primary. You have to worry if you're a Republican that you're too viewed as too moderate and some conservative Tea Party candidate comes along and knocks you off, which is exactly what happened with Eric Cantor in Virginia. And because of that, it forces the parties out to the sides. There's no reason to compromise, because if you compromise, you're going to get knocked off in a primary. And that's the problem, I believe.
Yeah, that's really interesting. In fact, folks, in Andy's article, he said just 9 of 435 seats in the House are even considered competitive. When we come back, folks, we've got a lot more questions to ask Andy. Stay with us. We'll be back in just a moment.
The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.
Speaking of ugly, we have the Democrats versus Republicans and tremendous polarization in Washington, D.C. They don't seem to be able to get anything done unless they absolutely have to. So we thought we'd bring on this morning an expert in that area. We've got with us today Andy Freeman. Andy, it's called the WashingtonUpdate.com, correct?
Correct. TheWashingtonUpdate.com.
TheWashingtonUpdate.com. In fact, go online and read his current article about Senate control within the GOP's reach. You talk about the Tea Party. You know, I've never quite figured out the Tea Party. I guess the I guess if you turn right and then just keep going far right, that's when you find the Tea Party, right?
Yeah, I mean, that. I guess that's fair. You know, they didn't start out that way. They started out as a group of fiscal conservatives who wanted to reduce the size of government and reduce government spending and weren't terribly concerned about social issues. But that has morphed into a concern about social issues as well. And, you know, I'm not sure that has served them well, because 42% of the country is independent, and most independents don't care about social issues. They care much more about the fiscal issues.
Right.
I think the Tea Party might have been better to stay on the original path, but, you know, what do I know?
And is there something similar to that on the liberal side, on the Democratic side?
There nothing is strong, but if you see people like Elizabeth Warren criticizing the president for not being sufficiently liberal, there is a small faction over there. But when you're in power, when you have the president in power, it's hard to criticize him from your own party. So, you might see that more with a Republican president.
Well, by the way, what do you think, Elizabeth Warren? I don't know that much about her. I'll have to say I agree with some of the positions she's taken with regard to Wall Street, because, you know, those guys pretty much almost buried the country years ago, and everybody came out scot-free and went back to their yachts and their vacation homes. What do you think of Elizabeth Warren?
Well, I mean, you make a good point. You know, there's a split in the Republican Party right now. You didn't quite say this, and I'll come back to Warren, but, you know, kind of between the establishment Republican and the Tea Party. And the establishment Republican Party is much more kind of pro-business, pro-Wall Street. And the Tea Party is more kind of populist, saying, wait a second, why are we bailing out all these big institutions? And it's interesting, kind of it's a complete circle, because the Tea Party on the extreme right, on that regard, agrees with Elizabeth Warren on the extreme left, who says, wait a second, should we be bailing out all of these big entities? So, you know, they're strange bedfellows sometimes in politics.
Yeah, maybe people should really start thinking about how they really feel about something and vote that way instead of voting along party lines. I think if we did that, we might get somewhere. By the way, are they ever going to get rid of Harry Reid? He's the Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi are the two politicians that drive me crazy.
Continue to drive you crazy, because Harry Reid just won an election 2 years ago, so he's around for another 5 years, and Pelosi's from a district that will never vote her out, so just hold your breath. They're going to be around for a while.
That's just awful.
Andy, I have terrible. A quick question. You mentioned independence, and I've always kind of felt of myself more as an independent. Are we ever going to have a third party?
It's a great question, you know, because as I said, 42% of the country, an all-time high, characterizes themselves as independent. But I just don't see it. You know, it's like if you have an industry with two major corporations and then you have a startup trying to get into that industry, it's almost impossible. The parties raise so much money. They know the rules so well about what to do to run an election. I just don't think you can have a third party. Now, you can have some very wealthy person, like maybe a Mayor Bloomberg out of New York, but, you know, those people seem to, when they get 10% of the vote, we're shocked. I just don't see it happening. I think we're stuck with these parties.
Are you going to switch parties like Charlie Crist did in Florida? You know,
you could do that.
If your own party doesn't put you in, you just go to the other side. Which
go to the other one. That's
hysterical.
Yeah.
Okay, so what do you think it's going to look like? Let's get past the elections. Let's say it's the day after the elections. What do you predict it's going to look like in Congress?
It's not a stretch to say the Republicans are going to keep the House of Representatives. You know, just because of this gerrymandering and the way the districts are set, I'll even go out on a limb and say the Republicans are going to keep the House for the rest of the decade. I think we can kind of assume that. The Senate is still very close. I mean, the Republicans did something smart this time, as they hadn't done in the last couple of years. They put up candidates that can attract independent votes. Because remember, 42% of the country is independent, 25% is Republican. So in most cases, you can't win a Senate seat just with Republican votes. You need to have some sort of more moderate candidate who says, you know, I'm willing to compromise on some issues in order to get independent votes. And this time the Republicans put up candidates that are more moderate that can do that. Last time, 2 years ago, they didn't, and they lost seats in the Senate. So I think the Republicans are in a good position to take the Senate, but they're not quite there. I mean, you need to see what September brings and what the polls show. Right now, it's really kind of a 50-50 split. It could go either way. But the Republicans have really done a good job of putting themselves in position to take over a majority of the Senate. Now, having said that, what does it mean? You still got the Republican House. You still have a Democratic White House. You're not going to get anything through Congress unless you have compromise. And the only time you're going to have compromise is when you have to have compromise, because there's an issue that really faces the country that has to be decided. So I'm not sure we're going to see much difference in the next couple of years, just more of the same, arguing, and then maybe compromising on something that has to be resolved, like the debt limit, raising the debt limit. Nobody wants to throw the country, have them default on the debt. So long answer there, Mike, but I think we see split government. Doesn't matter quite as much who takes over the Senate. Now, if you could just let me ramble on for one more second, there is kind of one inside baseball difference on who runs the Senate. The Senate is responsible for confirming the president's appointments, like cabinet secretaries or federal judges. And there you need 51 votes now to confirm somebody the president wants to say become a federal judge. If the Republicans take the Senate, then you have to assume it's going to be difficult for the president to get anybody appointed for the next 2 years. Consider, for instance, what if a Supreme Court justice passes away? I can't see the president and a Republican-controlled Senate agreeing on something, somebody. That's going to be a very difficult task.
Yeah, in fact, it seems to me, and I may be looking at this wrong, but it seems to me like even lately that some of the Democrats are kind of backing away from the president. Like they don't want to be too close. You know, they don't seem to be inviting him to their Christmas parties as much anymore.
They're certainly not inviting him to their campaign events. That's true. They're running apart from him. Part of that is due to Obamacare. They don't want to. Obamacare is still unpopular. They don't want the president up there, who is obviously viewed as the leader for Obamacare. So you're correct about that. The president is not campaigning with anybody. You don't see him on the stump with anybody. You see Bill Clinton with people, but not President Obama.
Yeah, it's amazing. He could be the epitome of a lame duck in his particularly if the GOP gets the Senate. Well, yep. All right. Well, we're going to stick with your predictions, and let's hope you're right, because I kind of think I want things to balance out a little bit better. Anyway, Andy, thank you so much for being with us, sir.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Have a great day. Thank you, sir. Take care. Bye-bye.
You have been listening to a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.